Hi, I'm Crystal Call. I am running for Congress in Virginia District 10. My primary is on June 18th. I'm running as a national security Democrat, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we welcome U.S. Congress candidate in the state of Virginia, Crystal Call. Stay tuned. I want to offer my appreciation to everyone for listening and subscribing to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, and sharing it with your friends and family, and for following us on social media. And if you're enjoying these conversations, please take a moment to submit a kind rating and review wherever you might be listening or watching this episode or any previous ones. Now in the US, we're winding down 2023, and many are celebrating the holiday season, but we're also coming up on an election cycle next year, and that means it's also the season for making choices. Indian Americans and South Asian Americans have been making their voices heard more and more in virtually every sector of the American zeitgeist, and definitely in their civic engagement. So within this, it was great to catch up with Crystal Call, running for U.S. Congress in Virginia's 10th District, and one of only two Indian American women currently running for congressional seats this year. Crystal's the granddaughter of Indian immigrants to the U.S., and grew up on Long Island with a very embedded sense of culture, language, and heritage. Through a range of academic achievements and a commitment to service, Crystal is a national security and defense expert, having spent many years in leadership positions in the intelligence and defense communities, both in and out of the Pentagon. She speaks 8 languages and has traveled extensively, giving her both the ability to connect and develop relationships, as well as the thoughtful perspective of empathy and cultural depth, especially in a district and an evolving American electorate, where this is incredibly critical for progress. In recent years, she served as a teacher at MIT and also as a small business owner who assists firms from socially and economically disadvantaged backgrounds, as well as businesses owned by women and veterans. I was able to catch up with her as she continues to campaign with voters and donors, and I asked her to first reflect on how she hopes her story uniquely resonates as a woman running in a Virginia district that's moderately leaning blue and increasingly diverse.
I think it's twofold. As you rightly mentioned, it is extremely diverse. It's 44% minority, about 16% Asian. It is a very female-friendly district, right? The last two representatives have both been women. It is a district that is very blue-leaning now, especially for a moderate Democrat like myself. And it is a district that is predominantly made up of defense contractors. So the whole district runs off the U.S. defense industrial base.
Yeah.
So defense civilians, military, veterans, small business owners like myself with defense contracts. So I think and for all those reasons, I'm very uniquely positioned because I am very relatable. And also from a youth demographic, the median age is 38 as well.
Yeah. Have you, you know, for the most part, this is your first foray into running for elected office. Has this been something that's been on your mind for a while? How does 2023, 2024, how did this capture your attention in a way giving you the kind of motivation to launch this?
Absolutely. I've always had a passion to serve. From a young age, I've had the conviction to want to run for office. And I grew up in Long Island. I left at 17, went to DC, to American University, studied international relations, minored in women in politics. And at 19, I was working on Capitol Hill. I was part of the Washington Leadership Program. It was through the Indian American Center for Political Awareness program where many colleagues of mine, such as like Meera Jantani and others, have come out of.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of the fact that a few of my colleagues from that program are in office today. And I carried through with that throughout my studies at Johns Hopkins, studying international relations, focusing on the Kashmir conflict, Israel-Palestine. My PhD, I worked on at Brown in political science. Yeah. Think tank work at Rand Corporation, Carnegie, CSIS, Woodrow Wilson. And then my entire career with the Department of Defense serving in the national security defense space. So this is the right time for me.
Yeah.
This is a time too where I think the community also just needs a strong leader to stand up.
You know, I've heard candidates a lot of time will express that they're there to represent everyday people. And you mentioned kind of the demographics and the sort of knowledge about your district and what it's made up of. And I'm curious, Crystal, what makes you an everyday person?
I'm a small business owner. I have a, which is not just VA-10, but I think most of America is a pretty common, relatable profession to be in. I have a company. I help technology firms get defense contracts. I'm also a teacher. I teach at MIT through 2U. I have been, you know, teaching for years. I am a former defense contractor, right? So like several in the Virginia area, I, you know, have worked in a contracting consulting capacity, but on a defense, you know, project. And I've also been a government employee as well. So I was a director at the Defense Threat Reduction Agency. I was a GS-15. And I think hitting on all those are what I would say are the most common professions of an average American, right?
Yeah. And does that, you think that for particularly for a hopefully growing middle class and folks who are going to really sort of think about like, well, what this means for them on a day-to-day basis, for someone who's developed quite an array of, you know, technical skills and leadership expertise, such as you have both in defense and policy and security, which aren't those topics unto themselves are not necessarily top of mind always for people, especially who are worried about gas prices and, you know, the cost of living and rent and jobs and their healthcare. How does that high level relative expertise that's not always on the top of the mind for many, many Americans, how does that translate to you being hopefully an effective listener who hopes to translate this to actually better outcomes?
As a small business owner, I understand the challenges of healthcare, first and foremost. Having worked for a company and now and getting health insurance through a company and now on my own, right, your premium skyrockets.
Yeah.
Your deductible skyrocket. If I get sick, I start getting nervous because I know what that means in terms of what kind of bills I have to look at. Seeing a specialist, prescription drugs, all of that. So that's a very real, relatable component of being a small business owner and understanding the struggles you have. And I think that there is definitely room for improvement in this country for small business owners in terms of just making healthcare more accessible, more affordable, especially the ability to see specialists, prescription drugs. Coming from academia, being a teacher myself, I understand education in particular. Yeah. And especially in VA-10, it's something that's a very critical issue of just needing to invest resources in our schools, investing in our future, in skills training for teachers, right? Curriculum enhancement, all of that. And the third is public safety, safe neighborhoods, safe communities. So those are my three. And the public safety also, I guess, stems back from my background in national security and in defense.
Yeah.
A safer America starts with a safe district.
Have you heard from neighbors and community members that these are the things that also for them translate to, at the end, more stability for themselves, more security for themselves, but from a day-to-day level, knowing that they're likely going to, it's going to translate for them to better jobs, more secure jobs, better safety, and therefore a little bit more prosperity, and for that matter, a little bit of help when it comes to, you know, the day-to-day items as well, the little things that help them save a little bit, those things that help with social mobility.
Yeah, I think that those are everything that you touched on. Social mobility is something that I definitely advocate for. I understand in a very real way the need to support our small businesses, to support our contractors, to keep in mind, especially, you know, right now there's a lot of angst over a potential government shutdown and what happens in a government shutdown. Government employees come back to jobs and contractors, often positions get cut. Very real, something I have lived through. I was a contractor myself during the last furlough we had. And that's something I can not just speak to and say, oh, you know, like try to understand what that is, but something where I can really show some deep empathy because, again, I've walked those shoes. I have lived through that in a very real way. And I think people appreciate that. They don't have to sit there and explain and educate you on their issues. And there's, I think there's nothing better than having representation from someone who really has just lived it.
Yeah, almost someone who gets it.
Someone who gets it, exactly. Yeah.
So your grandparents immigrated here. And, yes. And in a way, like many, it sort of framed your Indian American experience.
Yes.
Aside, you know, for you at least, I mean, how does your cultural identity kind of, in a way, all the things you just talked about, your background, the way that you can sort of get it and really relate to constituents, how does a cultural identity now empower you to lead in a different way?
My grandfather came to this country without a dime in his pocket. He earned a good living for himself and for his family. So he came to this country. He got in to a company called New York Life Insurance, and then he rose to become number three agent in the country. And he insured almost every Indian American on the East Coast. And he did that just through a lot of hard work. He was a very honorable businessman, very respected in the community, and not just in New York, but around the country. I mean, I've traveled to like Nashville, Tennessee, and there are families that know him. I've been in meetings, focus groups in Virginia, and I meet people who are like, oh, I met your grandfather 3 decades ago.
Right.
It's just, he really built quite a legacy for himself and the family. And that is really incredible because that is the American dream. And I want to be able to give that American dream to every person in VHM. I think that that is what America stands for. And that is what makes this country great.
You know, in the same way how your grandfather built this great legacy, you're mentioning that the two representatives who would possibly be preceding you are also women. And I really am curious that in representing women in your district, what would in a way be sort of your top of mind priorities as a legislator that you think would resonate the most for women in your district?
I'm a big women's rights advocate, as I think I've told you, right? At American University, I was a women in politics. I did a certificate study in it. I helped co-author a book on breaking the glass ceiling for women in Congress. I got to interview Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, Congressman Joe Wilson, back when I was 19 years old. I worked for UN Women Headquarters in the Middle East. I've done a lot of just women's rights advocacy work. So I'm very pro women's rights. I think that women, well, first of all, we're not exactly a minority. Right. We are a majority, but in many regards, we're treated as a minority, which I think is a problem. Yeah. Again, on all the, you know, when it comes to certain quotas, when it comes to looking at representation across industries, across sectors, we very much get categorized as a minority, even government, right? I mean, women owned small business, WASB, is a minority status with the government. So I appreciate that we have that to get women, you know, equal access, equal pay, equal representation. But I do think that in 2023, we should be at a point where women are no longer seen as a minority. We should have the right to choose over our body. We should have the right to equal pay. We should have the right to equal positions, equal respect in the community. And I don't think we're there yet. There's still a lot more work that needs to be done. And I think that VA10 is a great place where people are very receptive to women and they understand it. Across sectors, across industries, there's still work that needs to be done within my district and around the country. You know, I'm at least grateful for the opportunity that it is a very female-friendly state when it comes to district, when it comes to electing members of Congress.
Yeah. You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, let's come back to our conversation with U.S. congressional candidate from the state of Virginia, Crystal Cole. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
Hi, guys. I'm Ananya Pandey.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Crystal Gohl. I ask this a lot sometimes for guests, and I just wanted to find out, you know, other than your name, what do you carry on a day-to-day basis, maybe, that makes you proud to be an Indian American?
Sure. I actually have this discussion a lot. I say that there are several Indian Americans that come into positions. But I think what makes me unique is that I've actually committed my studies and my work to U.S.-India relations, to helping to promote Indian Americans in particular, and issues that would concern Indian Americans. So I'll start from childhood. I went to Vidyapeeth, which is a actual school. It was a Saturday school in New Jersey. And there I studied Sanskrit. I studied Vedic heritage. I learned to read and write Hindi and Sanskrit. I would recite shlokas, study the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and did traditional dance, you know, Kathak, Bharatanatyam. So, and my father would put me through some pretty rigorous like Hindi essay writing assignments. So in addition to, you know, obviously my school assignments where I had to keep my grades up, I had to, I also would have daily Hindi essays that he would take out a red pen and would critique and grade, and I'd have to rewrite. And he would even do this in the summers. If I had camp, if I had sports activities, there was always a devotion to Hindi essay writing, and also the comic books, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
There were these comic books.
Amar Chitra Katha.
Yes, but they were actually religious comic books, and they were on the Hindu mythology, Ganeshji and Shivji, and they were written in Hindi. So I would be 7 years old, and I'd sit there, and I would be reading them, and then he would quiz me. And I would have exams on them. These were, you know, I laugh now, but these were serious. I mean, these were not...
I was going to say, this sounds like very important home-based scholarship.
It was not a joke. I mean, my dad is, I joke that I have worked with several four-star generals. I worked with two secretaries of defense, Secretary Austin and Mattis. But my toughest instructor, toughest boss, toughest critic has been my father of anyone in my life. Yeah. And so that started at a young age. Then in school at American, at Johns Hopkins and at Brown, most of my papers were on the Kashmir conflict. They were on U.S.-India relations, U.S.-India nuclear deal, India foreign policy. So I really, I focused a lot of my studies on with a South Asia concentration. And then I worked for a number of think tanks, Center for Strategic International Studies, South Asia Center. When I was at the Woodrow Wilson Center for International Scholars, I focused on Kashmir and a lot of conflict issues in India, Pakistan, and then RAND Corporation.
Led
a study, governance development, and it was Afghanistan, Pakistan, and looking at India. And then I was at Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in their Middle East Center in Beirut, and I did a briefing on Kashmir and was explaining to many of them, you know, just identifying certain aspects of the conflict as it relates to Israel-Palestine. And then in the Department of Defense, I've led a crisis cell when we were at war with Syria, Iraq, and I've been in positions within the DOD where I have looked at in security issues as it relates to India. So carrying through in my studies, in my academic thought leadership and public policy in my work, I've really been very entrenched in issues as it relates to India. And even just recently, I was in Delhi for the Business 20 Summit. I was part of bits of the G20 Summit, and I had spent some time. So I also travel back frequently, at least every other year or so. I go and explore new parts of India. Like this time I went to Dehradun and spent time. I go to Kashmir frequently as well. I think it's important to stay connected, to know what's going on in the region. So in that way, I mean, I'm very much proud to be an Indian American. I'm very proud to be a Hindu. I am proud to be American, you know, first and foremost. But I've definitely not shied away from my culture, my heritage.
So, I mean, your story resonates with so many. I mean, how to integrate. I can't say that we've all had Hindi essay grading on a daily or a weekly basis.
You know, I thank him now because...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, at Johns Hopkins, I took a Hindi certification exam, and I've used it. As a kid, it was stressful, but as an adult, it's really valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. I ask this a lot of people, but particularly in mounting a campaign and running for office, I'm curious what you, especially given your background and given your experiences, what have you actually had to unlearn in this process?
What have I had to unlearn? That's a good question. As probably with most things in life, you need to keep it simple. People are concerned about jobs. People are concerned about healthcare for their family and for themselves. People are concerned about education for their kids. So I think that when you're in certain environments, it could be government, it could be a think tank, it could be business. There's a lot of intricacies. There's a lot of complexities at play. And when you're running for office, it's not about all of the geopolitics and all of those, you know, complex, heady conversations that you're having there. But you have to really stick to the core issues of what do people care about, right? And that's why my platform is education, healthcare, and public safety. They're very core to VHN. They're core to Americans. They're core to myself, right? I mean, when you're a community member, and I think I think sometimes people can get a bit lost in some of those discussions, which are great and they're important to have, especially coming from an academic, you know, background, partially too. But you can't lose sight of what matters and what's important, which is putting food on the table, which is making sure that, you know, your family is healthy, and making sure that you're safe. And so in that sense, that is something that maybe I have had to look at very objectively of, you know, what's the bottom line of what you need to focus on.
You know, in that same vein, being a candidate, a lot of times, you know, as you've already put, is about amplifying your brand and strategizing and how to position and leverage and really get out there and exude that confidence. And so voters and donors can align around that. In the same way, and to try and frame that, where does humility and collaboration and compromise actually fit into that strategy and life as a candidate too?
I think running for office is a very humbling process. For sure. You are meeting with so many groups of people. You're hearing stories. One very powerful anecdote that stands out is there was a woman who shared that she didn't have access to her VA benefits and had to give up custody of her child to an unsafe husband and was almost in tears. And it's just, I mean, something like that humbles you immediately to realize you know, that's very real. And that's something where your representative can stand up and do something for you, you know, and now in a good position, working at, you know, a good company. But at that point in time was something very, again, seems simple. You need your VA benefits, but without shelter, you can't have a child. You were forced to give up custody. She couldn't provide housing for her kid. Listening to people. Ultimately, listening to people's stories is what a lot of running for office is about. It is understanding where everyone's coming from, what their issues are, making sure people are heard, and then making sure that action is taken to help defend them. I mean, that is what people need, especially when we're in a system where sometimes it does not happen. And you have officials that don't necessarily care or don't take action to really help and support their constituents. So that is something that I think is very critical that you have to do. It's a responsibility you're taking on.
Yeah. Absolutely. And on top of that, I imagine that, you know, hopefully because of that listening and that humility that you mentioned, it translates a lot to therefore then finding ways to collaborate and ways to get things done. Something that I don't know a lot of Americans have a whole lot of faith in these days with Congress. Running for Congress is such a terrific opportunity, and the one that you've embraced, and it opens a lot of doors, and ultimately, you know, a door hopefully for you as a legislator. And this has been a journey for you, right? Obviously, this has come through many roles and many continents and many languages and all the terrific things that you've done. But for those who might be learning about you for the first time as a candidate and just getting to know Crystal Cole, their journey for the most part as a voter goes from vote to vote. And so I'm curious, what opportunities and doors are you hoping to open for those voters in VA 10?
Well, I try to make it a point to attend the town halls, to speak to different communities. As I mentioned, there's about 44% minorities. So I have gone out and spoken with the Korean Association at the Thai Temple, at the Gurdwara. At several Diwali events with different subgroups of Indian Americans, like Keralite Association of Greater Washington, Telugu community, to the Kashmir Overseas Association, to veterans groups, to defense contractors. Right, there are so many different communities. There's even there's a Peruvian community, right? There, so there's lots of subsets within even minority groups, right? You know, so if it's 11% Latino, there's a, you know, Guatemalan community, there's a Peruvian community, there's a Honduran community. So I think it's really important to understand those nuances and understand that those issues do change. They're not just lumped in one category necessarily. And there's a difference between military and veterans and defense civilians and defense contractors and federal government employees. And, you know, and within minority groups, there's lots of subsets within our own Indian American community. Right. I mean, I think I must have spoken at almost 50 Diwali functions.
Yeah, there's so many subcultures, right?
There's everywhere. So many subcultures, which was beautiful. It makes us much richer. It makes for a very, you know, just a rich tapestry. And I think that is when you really touch and feel people's needs, when you don't just blanket things, when you know that there's, you know, I mean, there's issues of we need more diversity in STEM, for example. So I was speaking with a lady who runs the Children's Science Museum, for example, in VA10, right? And that's something that she was very concerned about, of needing more women in STEM, needing more more minorities in STEM. From a young age to come in. So there's a host of issues, and the onus is on you as the candidate to go and to learn them and to speak to all these groups. And that is the only way you're going to learn, and you're going to understand what's important to the community. You're not going to just place your own judgment of what you deem to be those critical issues. So you have to really listen, and you have to make it a point to do a lot of that outreach. And at the very deep grassroots level, I'm a firm believer of that, not just the large organizations and not at a very like top-down level, but it really starts very bottom-up. And that takes a lot more work to get out there and to meet them.
Well, hopefully those opportunities and those doors in your listening tours and many, many engaged visits with folks in the community, hopefully that translates to a lot of success. Crystal, thank you so much for joining us. What a terrific treat to chat with you.
Thank you so much, Abe. I appreciate it.
No, this was a lot of fun, and I hope we can visit with you down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Crystal. And please check out her website, crystalforcongress.com. That's KRYSTLEFORCONGRESS.com. And you can find her Act Blue donation page in this episode's show notes. If you haven't done so already, please take a moment to share a kind rating or review if you're enjoying this. And hopefully you're also being kind to yourself and those around you. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.